all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
And welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio. It's a Friday, March 3rd. I'm Pat Kreitlow, and Zommer's joining us here in our Madison studio as well. It's a picture-perfect day on Lake Wissota, and coming up on this Friday in this hour, you know, democracy ought to be bipartisan. It always had been. We seem to have an issue with that now, at least for some folks, unfortunately, too many folks on one particular side of the political spectrum. Well, former Congressman Richard Gephardt spent a decade in Congress as the House Democratic leader. He also ran for president. Now he's trying to make democracy bipartisan again while on a speaking tour that included Wisconsin stops this week with groups sponsoring community discussions on the future of democracy and what's at stake if election results continue to be challenged without basis. We'll also talk to Mark Jacob, a former editor at the Chicago Tribune and Sun-Times. He will fill us in on what happened this week when the city saw for the first time in a long time a sitting mayor lose a bid for re-election, and whether the runoff that's coming up in this race is any kind of harbinger for politics in 2024. I believe Michael Cairo is going to be by, meteorologist with Weatherology, to give us an update on the weekend forecast. And then Dan Schumacher will be along to tell us all about the sports that's coming up this weekend and share some memories of the NFL Combine, something that he had taken part in at one point. If you'd like to reach us, you can call the studio at 844-967-2789 or 715-388-7155. And our email address is radio@upnorthnewswi.com. As I was looking through headlines to share today, there is yet another reason why Wisconsin Republicans have fallen even further out of the mainstream when it comes to caring for the health and well-being of Wisconsin residents. For a time, Wisconsin had been one of only a dozen states that still had not strengthened Badger Care by accepting much additional federal funding for Medicaid coverage, which covers folks who are at extremely low incomes, disabled, some elderly, many of them who have jobs, no matter what Republicans try to tell you. These are working Americans, working Wisconsinites who really could use more affordable coverage. But in this state, they equate Medicaid to welfare rather than the benefit that it is on so many levels, not only from a labor force standpoint, but from a human decency standpoint. But Wisconsin was one of only 12 states still having a temper tantrum about this provision in the Affordable Care Act and refusing, costing taxpayers now billions of dollars. Wisconsin then was one of 11 states that had not yet expanded Medicaid and strengthened Badger Care. But as of yesterday, Wisconsin's about to be one of only 10 states that is still throwing a temper tantrum, as North Carolina legislative leaders announced on Thursday an agreement to expand Medicaid to hundreds of thousands of additional low-income adults through the Affordable Care Act. It's a milestone for Republicans there, many of whom opposed expansion for a decade until recently, and for hospitals and patient advocates who'd been seeking it all this time. If the deal goes through, the state would start providing expansion coverage to people starting next January. They knew this. They knew that this was the right thing to do and that the only reason to oppose it is because it was in a bill that a Democratic president wanted to get passed on behalf of Americans. And it is so far past time for Wisconsin Republicans to grow up and to help more of their constituents with affordable health care. You'd love to say that that could be done. You'd love to see it happen. Certainly a lot of families and patients would like to see it happen, but we are still waiting. I've mentioned a couple of times that the Conservative Political Action Conference is underway. This is truly the far right of the far right that are gathering. The more and more mainstream Republicans are not attending the annual circus when it comes to the suburbs of Washington, D.C., but that doesn't mean the circus didn't pitch its tent and start some carnival barking, and we wanted to share some of it. For example, first couple of bites here come from Florida Senator Rick Scott, the person who wants to cut Medicaid, Medicare, and Social Security, but then also says he doesn't want to. This is not exactly the Ronald Reagan shining city on a hill speech, if you will. Here's how Rick Scott kind of opened things up about, the plans to destroy America.
So welcome to America in the year 2023, where we are destroying the country we love.
We know, Rick. We know.
That's what's happening right here in America. We are destroying the country we love. Now, to be clear, it's not you.
Oh.
It's not me. We're not destroying our country.
Well, then who?
It's the President of the United States who's destroying our country. It's the U.S. Senate that is destroying our country.
Okay.
It's the news media.
Oh.
It's the Democrat Party, academia, Hollywood, Wall Street, and many of our big corporations.
So it's everybody but you. Okay, that's fine. It's probably leading people to think that you got to be one of the most hated people out there. And he takes glee in that. We might play that bite a little bit later. You also had attacks on people. There was a senator who called out Nancy Pelosi, even though she's not speaker, and the president's press secretary, a black gay woman. Those are the people that come in for the most vitriol from them, and downplaying things like the family separation policy at the border. That's what they're going to have for the rest of this weekend, and, God bless them for it. Let's turn instead to how we can bring people together, and we will talk about that with former Missouri Congressman Dick Gephardt coming up in just a bit. You're up north. We are going to be talking to Congressman Richard Gephardt in just a bit about the effort to make democracy bipartisan again. First, just very quickly, in men's college basketball, the Purdue Boilermakers defeated the Wisconsin Badgers 63-61, and they will next be playing the Minnesota Gophers at Minnesota on Sunday, and that will wrap up the regular season. Then the Big Ten tournament, all the conference tournaments come up after that. All right, let's get before we get to Congressman Gephardt, let's get a very quick check on the forecast from Weatherology. And I think we've had Mike the past couple of days. It might be Laura with us. Good morning.
Okay, like a 60.
There we go. Laura, is that you?
It is.
It is. Okay. Thank you so much. Appreciate your patience. We're going to be talking to Congressman Richard Gephardt here in just a sec, but we wanted to get a quick look around the state of Wisconsin as we head into the weekend, Laura. So tell us about it appears to be a rather quiet area of weather we've got going right now.
Indeed. We don't want to jinx it. We all know how the weather can change.
I know.
Here.
Sorry.
It's okay. But yeah, very, very quiet weather throughout the state here as we kick off the weekend. So good news there. Bit of cloud cover, but all in all, pretty quiet. But we do have a system coming in later this weekend. So we're going to keep a very, very watchful eye on that. And with the warmer temperatures, especially during the day in many areas, we're going to be seeing more of a rain event with this, as well as a little bit of snow mixing in, especially across the central portion of the state here. We'll have that beginning here Saturday with a chance of rain and some snow towards the afternoon, but temperatures climbing into those low 40s. And then as we head into Sunday, we'll have a slight chance of rain, high in the mid 40s as well. Looking a little cooler further north, we'll see a little bit more snow mixed in with that. But across the southern portion of the state, could hear a few rumbles of thunder here Sunday night with that set up here, and we'll see everything push out on Monday. I'm meteorologist Laura Lockwood.
Laura, thank you so much. Have a great weekend.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right. Now let's bring in former Missouri Congressman Richard Gephardt, who has been on a speaking tour, including stops this week in La Crosse, Green Bay, and Eau Claire, about the fairly simple premise of, making democracy bipartisan again. Congressman Gephardt, good morning.
Good morning. Great to be with you.
Well, nice to hear from you. I know a lot of folks in Wisconsin got to know you, not only as House Democratic leader, but during a presidential campaign. Certainly times when you were working with members of Congress from Wisconsin, the Dave Obies and Ron Kynes and folks like that. So you're definitely a familiar enough presence here that I'm sure you had some positive response as you returned to Wisconsin to talk to people about the state of democracy. And let me start with that, because I know we've talked about it a lot. I hope it's not stating the obvious, but our democracy, we've learned over the past couple of years, is a little more fragile than I think a lot of people assumed, isn't it?
It sure is. And that's why I was in Wisconsin. And I'm part of a group we call Keep Our Republic, which is solely dedicated to making sure we can continue to have valid, trusted elections, which is the kind of the cornerstone or the foundation of a democracy. And we're worried about it because, as you just said, in the last few years, there has been real cracks in our ability to have good elections. And most importantly, people are beginning to not trust our elections. And that's a fatal problem if you don't correct it. So we're working in Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Michigan in local communities. This is not just a statewide effort. It's a local effort to try to bring people together, both Republicans and Democrats and independents, who are worried about this and want to know what they can do in their local area to make sure we have good elections.
Yeah, because that faith in democracy should only be undermined by anything that's based in fact. And I think there's an important point to be made here, is that if there were actual evidence of funny business, of something untoward in our elections, I 100% believe you would have both Democrats as well as Republicans saying, "What is this? We've got to get rid of this." But as has been said over and over again, the problem is that the accusations that have been made in light of 2020 simply had no factual basis, and that's what makes them so dangerous.
That's exactly right. If you put out non-factual information that the election was broken, stolen, defrauded, then you break people's trust. And we've always had conspiracy theories in the country. That's kind of a common thing. Nothing new about that. But when it really gets legs and people really begin to believe it, even though it's not factual, it's not supported by the facts, then you've got a problem. It's a perception problem, not a factual problem, but you got to deal with perception. And if you just let it go and people continue to erode in their belief and their faith in your ability to have a good election, then the democracy is really done. And that's what we're most worried about. We came within an inch of having a broken election in 2022, but only because 10 or 12, both Republican and Democratic people, election officials, secretaries of state, Mike Pence, did what the right thing to do. They did the right thing. They stood up for the process being fair and valid. We would have had a broken election.
No doubt we would have. We're talking to former Congressman Richard Gephardt about restoring more faith and trust in democracy. And as you know, from being a longtime member of Congress, that perhaps the thing that's working against that more than anything is the cynicism that people have about Congress, about politics in general, that other people will exploit. And one of the questions I've asked for a long time, going back to my days as in TV news and then as a state legislator, is you can't turn the whole ship around. Nobody expects you to. But how do we pull that cynicism back to maybe more of a healthy level of skepticism, or just somehow make it less easy to cast doubts on the honor of people serving in politics?
Well, there are a couple of things that need to happen. First of all, I think social media is a big culprit in this problem, not because anybody wanted it to be, but that's the way it's turned out. Part of that problem is that the way the social media platforms operate their business plan, which is to keep your attention so they can make more money from their ads, I think Nielsen ratings here and the way TV stations have to operate. And so they use AI, artificial intelligence, algorithms, whatever you want to call it, to boost to you information that they know, because they know everything about you if you're on the platform, that they know will keep you angry and anxious. So they're in the business of boosting to people 24/7 information that may not be factual at all, but will keep you upset. So you'll keep watching the platform. So that has been a big part of this problem. The other part of it is that I think a lot of Americans expect democracy and election process to be neat and simple and easy. None of it is. I was in the House of Representatives for 28 years, half of that time as leader of the Democrats. I can tell you democracy is really hard. Even if the people aren't as divided as they are today, it is really difficult, because its very job is to resolve big disagreements, differences of opinion about policy and about what the country should do. So it, by definition, has to be slow, painstaking, difficult process to get to those resolutions. But what I always say to people, as big of a mess as it usually is, it's far superior to the alternative, which is letting one person make all the decisions for all the rest of us.
Exactly. So, it is that sense of instant gratification. It's instant gratification is really what it is. And, you're not going to get that when you're talking about public policy. So let's shift over to what you are doing now. You mentioned the group that you're working with, and that you and your and that organization work with other civic groups to promote trust in the strength of the Republic and its institutions. What are these sessions like? Who are the folks that are showing up? In other words, do you feel like you're preaching to the already converted, or are you in fact essentially giving these folks the tools they need to help spread the word about ways to strengthen trust in our democracy?
That's a great question. So in the initial phase here, we're going into local communities like Eau Claire and Green Bay and La Crosse, and we're pulling together groups of, I guess you could call them leaders, but very diverse people, very nonpartisan, bipartisan people, people who have experience in the community, who are trusted voices in the community from both ends of the spectrum, and that can give us a sense of what's happening in that community on the ground right now in this question of democracy. And then what more can we do, and what more can they do? They really have to do it. We're not from Wisconsin. We don't live in Wisconsin. The people in the community have to do this. And so we're forming groups that we hope will keep active and keep going. We've done this in Pennsylvania in a number of communities. These groups are now working on their own without us at all. We're just kind of the convener. We're the warning system that this thing is in trouble and we got to do something about it as citizens of this country. So we had great meetings and we came up with great ideas. We're going to keep talking about those ideas, refine them. One of the ideas that we got, I think, in La Crosse was, can we do messaging out to the general public in that region about the election process, how it works, how it can be threatened, what are the unconventional threats to it, to just give people an understanding, a better understanding of how the process works, and how it can work and how it will work in 2024.
And again, to learn more about that, the group that the Congressman's working with, you can go to keeprepublic.com to learn what they're doing and what you can do to, again, help restore and bolster that faith in American democracy. Former Congressman Richard Gephardt, it's an honor. Thank you so much for the visit, for all you do, and continued safe travels in this endeavor.
Thanks so much.
All right. Have a great weekend. Again, former Congressman Richard Gephardt joining us there. We're going to take a break here. And then when we come back, we're going to talk to Mark Jacob, former editor of the Chicago Tribune and the Sun-Times, about the week in political news coverage, but also that Chicago mayoral election. And a bit of a surprise, at least for those of us outside the city. All that and more coming up yet here on this Friday on Up North News Radio.
Follow Up North News online anytime. Search Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for Up North News WI and our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com.
We're visiting now with Mark Jacob, author, former Chicago Tribune Metro editor, a former editor at the Sun-Times, somebody who helps us watch media from a national standpoint. But now, as we played a little Chicago tune there, trying to conjure up Mayor Lori Lightfoot and wondering if the people of Chicago will still love her. Not enough to reelect her this week, apparently, Mark. But good morning. Thanks for being here. Kind of a surprise to us. We're not used to incumbent mayors in big cities losing. But what was your quick overview of the Chicago election this week?
Well, the signs were there that she was going to lose. If you were watching, from close. And one thing, Pat, I want to say is that you're seeing a lot of national media draw all these kind of sweeping national conclusions on what happened in Chicago. And the truth is, what happened in Chicago was a very Chicago thing. And the rejection of Lori Lightfoot wasn't really a rejection of her politics or even a rejection of her performance as much as a rejection of her demeanor and her inability to get along with people, her ability to ostracize allies, and just it was a personality problem, frankly. And 4 years ago, Chicagoans overwhelmingly voted for her. She was, came out of nowhere. She was not one of the leading candidates when she started, and she ran as the reform candidate. And Chicagoans are desperate for reform. And so she won handily. And then she became not really a very much of a reform mayor. I mean, it was a tough 4 years. You had the pandemic and you had the looting after the George Floyd murder. And she didn't, and it's not that she handled them terribly. It's more that every time you heard about her dealings with regular people or with city employees, they were terrible. I mean, their emails came out showing just this abusive conduct toward underlings and stuff like that. She was just kind of a personality problem, really, is what got her.
Mm-hmm. Well, but when you talk about whether this is or isn't a harbinger of 2024, what you sense is it strikes me, it's not an exact analogy here, but a couple of folks were almost forced to fight in the playground because of the way the crowd is egging them on. And the crowd in this case wants there so desperately, it seems to be this fight between you are pro-police all the way, right, and or you are pro-public schools, right, all the way. And what it sure sounds like to me is a lot of folks on the right side of the spectrum hoping to start some kind of an internal squabble so that Democrats can look either weak on law enforcement or not as committed to public schools as they should be. And I don't know if all that is even real in Chicago.
Yeah, those are the two big issues probably are, how to deal with crime and the police, and also how to deal with schools and whether to, go to vouchers and stuff like that. It's that those are common issues, and those are issues, national issues as well. The two candidates who are going to be in the runoff are a stark, contrast in that respect, because Paul Vallis, who is really the most, right-leaning candidate in the race, also was the only white person in the candidate and in the initial round of voting. He's been endorsed by the police union. And just to be really clear, in Chicago, the police union is a mess. The police union is, it's very Trumpy. even though the city's not. It's very right wing, and the history of policing in Chicago is a terrible one, and there's just been this attitude among too many police officers that they're an occupying force in minority neighborhoods, and that's how many of them behave. That's why you had the Laquan McDonald police murder. They got covered up by the mayor and by the police on the scene, and only was exposed, you know, years later. And so you have that. And on the other hand, you have Brandon Johnson, who's a very liberal, probably, you know, more liberal than the average Chicagoan candidate. And he's endorsed by the Chicago Teachers Union, which is, you know, more liberal than most teachers unions probably. And so, you know, and so there is, yes, there is this attempt by the right, for example, to weaken the clout of teachers unions. And so, yeah. So those issues will play out. Yes, I agree with that.
So when's the general election for this?
It's first week in April, I think.
Okay, yeah. So that's coming up as well. We were talking in our last segment with former Missouri Congressman Dick Gephardt about the speaking tour that he was taking with groups that want to help restore faith in democracy, something that has been undermined exclusively through lying. There's no like flaw that's been exposed that both Democrats and Republicans can point to. But I asked him a question that I'm going to ask you as well, because whether you are a member of Congress like him or somebody who's worked in the media as long as we have, we are awash in cynicism in this country, just awash. And now to the point where, you know, our lack of faith in politics has become a self-fulfilling prophecy. And while we don't expect every politician to be, you know, a goody two shoes or whatever the case may be, the question I asked is, you know, what can we do to try to take some of that cynicism and turn the dial just a little bit closer to skepticism and just not to be so vitriolic? Is that a case of not being able to get the toothpaste back in the tube, or are there things that the congressman and others can say and do that tone down the rhetoric a little bit?
Well, number one, we have to recognize the truth, which is that the election system mostly works as far as people being able to cast ballots and, you know, determine their leaders. So the real danger is that you have this force, in my opinion, I'm sorry, Pat, that Republican Party in this country has just gone off the rails, and it is attempting to prevent people from voting and make voting less accessible. That those are all bad things. But what I'd like to see happen is more of a kind of a return to the values that this country was built on. And, you know, there were problems. You know, slavery was allowed at the start of this country, and women couldn't vote. But there were a lot of things about self-determination by the citizens that were really important, and going back to that is important. And not everyone is cynical about it. I mean, you look at Stacey Abrams and all the activism in Georgia to get people to vote despite, you know, voter suppression laws. That's not cynical. That is idealistic. That is people trying to take control of their government and make the majority rule. And the most alarming thing to me that's happening now is that you have so many people who don't want the majority to rule. You know, you have this thing where, I mean, look at the abortion issue. I mean, you know, you've got 2/3 of Americans wanting abortion to be legal in some or all cases, and yet it's in some states it's clearly it's banned. In some cases, it's under siege. And this is even in, you know, in states like Kansas voted for abortion rights, but the politicians don't want the will of the people. And that's the frightening thing is politicians who don't want the voters to have a say.
Exactly. And that we again are treating electoral politics as some kind of a sport, rather than a democracy where, again, you count the votes, and if you didn't come out on the right side, then, you know, you move on and you try to win the next time.
Exactly. And just to be really clear, that's kind of what the Democrats did in 2016. I mean, they were very upset that Trump got elected, especially when he had fewer popular votes. But those are the rules of the game. the Democrats accepted it. They accepted nobody. I didn't hear people say, well, you know, Trump isn't president. Of course he was president. And so really what I just got to say that you have one side trying to undermine election integrity and you have the other side not. And, you know, that's, you just got to say it. That's the fact.
There is nothing wrong with wanting your person to win or to stay in office. And there were plenty of people in 2016 that joked about, could we give Obama a third term, much like at the end of Clinton's presidency, you know, and I'm sure Republicans at the end of George W. Bush, but that's not the way it works. The difference is if you're actually trying to undermine an election to keep somebody in who lost, it's one thing to engage in wishful thinking. It's another thing to be a monarchist. And that's essentially, that was something that this country was built on, was a debate between democracy or monarchy. And we have people who have moved into the monarchist category who they won't call themselves that, but that certainly is the way they're behaving. And they get a lot of their juice from outlets like Fox News, which we've talked about multiple times this morning about the Dominion lawsuit, pointing out that it is not a news network. It is engaged in political messaging, and that's only been reinforced with everything we're learning this week, Mark.
Right. I mean, it is a disinformation service. I mean, and clearly, I mean, the stuff that's come out in that Dominion lawsuit, just it proves that the Fox people don't believe what they're putting on the air. They clearly don't believe it. They know that they're BSing their customers. It's like the fact that got customers is really depressing, because these must be people who are just ignorant or want to be lied to, because time after time we've seen, you know, they, Pat, these are not like innocent lies. These were lies that helped foment an insurrection. These also were lies that helped, you know, kill people during the pandemic, because they undermined the confidence in vaccines. I mean, Fox's lies they're not innocent, just kind of sporty political lies. They are lies that kill people.
To that end, when we talk about what can we do to, again, reel things, you know, turn down the dial a bit. And some of our best allies right now are going to be not people on the progressive or Democratic side of the aisle. It's going to be our Republican friends, neighbors, family members, the ones who are, we had a caller this morning talking about being a Fox News viewer for years and years, and then finally understood how far things had gone off the rails. And frankly, those are the folks that we need more than ever. And so when we talk about, you know, Congressman Gephardt coming in as a former Democratic leader, I mean, that's all fine and good, but it's really going to be some of his former GOP colleagues who can say the things that are going to, you know, make it less likely that people will actually watch a propaganda channel like Fox and believe what spews out of it.
Right. Well, and also Gephardt was really one of the most conservative Democrats as well. So, you know, so it wasn't, but you do see, you know, like the Lincoln Project and, you know, Bill Kristol. There are a lot of people who 10 years ago would have been considered, you know, just mainstream Republicans who are realists and see what's happened to that political party and have said, no, I'm not going there. And I really admire those people, and I think we need them, and we need more of them. And it's very frustrating, you know, when you see somebody, you know, they're on TV, they're always like wanting to interview right-wing people. I don't know why they do, because they don't seem to want to go. They don't seem to want to go to the leftist diners, for example. And then you have these people say, well, I'm still for Trump. I'm still for Trump. I mean, how could you still be for Trump? I mean, how many crimes does he have to commit? But so there is this, there's this impulse, and I've had it, where you want to say, oh, just forget about those people. They're just unreachable. But I think you've got a point. We've got to try to reach them. And I don't think these people, I don't think all these people are evil people. I think a lot of people are, some people are Republicans out of momentum because their parents were. It's a habit. It's a bad habit, like smoking, is what I think.
It's something that, again, people think that they have to be something forever when, you know, the fact of the matter is we can all grow and mature, and we can change the way that we think on this or that. we've run out of time to say how much harder it is when you have regular newsrooms that are reducing their staffing. There was a new report today on just how low staffing has gotten at America's newspapers. And that's a damn shame, but we'll have to save that for another time. Mark Jacob, thank you very much for all the insight from a national and a Chicago perspective. Appreciate it very much.
See you later.
All right. Have a great weekend. All right, coming up on Monday, we're going to have a guest from the Main Street Alliance, a member of the Main Street Alliance, a group that is truly standing up for small businesses in Wisconsin, and talk about the things that Governor Tony Evers is proposing in his budget and their impact on small businesses. And it's Movement Monday, so we'll talk to somebody from the Citizens Climate Lobby, another way that you could choose to make a difference in making politics more personable, more palatable, and more like what you want it to be. That's all coming up on Monday. Dan Schumacher is coming up next. We'll talk about sports and the NFL Combine. You're up north. The Grateful Dead walk-up music can only mean Dan Schumacher is joining us from UW-Eau Claire to talk a bit about sports as we head into the weekend. It's one of those quieter weekends. You know, the football season's over. The basketball playoffs haven't really ramped up yet. I can tell you that Marquette won the Big East title this week. The men, they close out the regular season tomorrow afternoon at home against St. John's. And then they will have their Big East tournament quarterfinal in New York. It says here next week, Thursday, is when Marquette will be in action in their conference tournament. The Badgers, meanwhile, lost to fifth-ranked Purdue, 63-61 last night at the Kohl Center. They are in Minneapolis to play the Gophers on Sunday. And then the Big Ten tournament will get going on Wednesday. And Dan, I know we mentioned it last week, but Marquette was not picked to finish as well as they did. So it's been a nice surprise.
I think they were picked
eighth or ninth out of 11 teams. Yeah, exactly. So,
you know, that coach Shaka, he's won everywhere he's gone. He's been at a low mid-major and has been to the NCAA tournament. He's been in major institutions. And it looks like this is a great fit for Marquette to have him.
Yeah.
It looks like a great fit. He brings a lot of energy to the court.
And you cannot oversell the importance of that, bringing that enthusiasm. Some coaches, I suppose, can get it done by being very cerebral, but I don't know that that works as well.
Two different energies. When you look at Shaka, he gives us such positive and energetic, and he's into the game, and he's supporting his guys. Mm-hmm. And then you got a guy that you look at, the head coach at Iowa, who makes has all this energy, but has the wrong kind of energy, where he's staring down refs and just being a distraction to his team. So, it's tournament time. The Blue Golds play today, women's basketball down in University of Chicago. Whitewater plays; they're at home. So at every level, basketball and hockey is all in playoff season. So it's a exciting time as we get into March Madness, true March Madness.
True March Madness. And I think next Friday we'll do a very comprehensive overview of where the postseason stands in the WIAC. But as you and I, we were visiting yesterday and the NFL Combine was on. Mm-hmm. And that's when you reminded me that way back, not long after the earth cooled, you were in the NFL Combine. When was that? Tell that story.
That would be 1989. It was that was back when teams requested you. You were not it wasn't the NFL now runs their own scouting part, and they do invitations from the NFL itself.
Okay.
Back in the early days, you were either teams had to sponsor you or request that you come and compete against everybody else. But it was nowhere near the level that it is now, from the amount of drills you do, agility drills, the weightlifting, the measuring of your arms, your hands, it was just not that. We did do a body fat where they tested to see what your body fat was, but mostly it was about your 40 speed, your 20 speed, your shuttle run, and then actually for me as a wide receiver, catching the football. They would have a machine going, and they wanted to see how you used your hands. So it's evolved into something – geez, way greater than I could have ever thought of in 1989. But
I can't think of anything more depressing than to see what our body fat numbers were in 1989 versus what they are today.
Yeah. They don't have a measuring scale for me right now.
Yeah.
But you know, I do remember I was 6.7% body fat in 1989.
Wow.
And they wanted you underneath 8% as a wide receiver, quarterback, running back, a specialty player. So they actually had some science to what your body fat is, how much weight they could actually put on you or muscle in their off season to make even better. So it's pretty comprehensive. It's even more comprehensive now, where it blows my mind, where it's like we talked about it yesterday. It's become a TV day.
Right.
It's, I mean, yeah, it's on all day on NFL Network.
It's like the NFL draft. You remember the draft was just a bunch of guys in a room going, I picked this guy, I picked that guy. And now it's such a Hollywood production, you know?
Yep.
And get it. There's money to be made in it, and it's not it's not unattractive, you know, to have it packaged up this way, but it really has gotten away from what it once was.
Oh, it was. It is. It is. And I tell you what, you start to add in all this, all those guys on the field are already getting paid, and they're not pros yet because of NIL. All of those players are those top players.
Getting the name, image, and licensing money.
Correct. Already get making money as a college student because of college life has changed. So now they're just waiting to cash in on the NFL money now.
So where were you out of when you were the strapping young wide receiver? You were coming out of what school?
Winona State.
Winona
Division
State.
Division II school. There was many division. There was two different combines. They had small colleges and big colleges. And I was there with a kid from La Crosse, a kid from Eau Claire, kid from St. Cloud. They were all Division II, Division III schools. And then the one AA, which is now called FCS, they had their own separate combine, but it was at the same location. And you were put in pods based on what division you were in. But now that's not the case. They lump everybody together now.
Wow. Okay. And so how did that story, I'm sure the listeners are wondering, great, you were at the combine. Then what happened to you?
I had a cup of coffee with a couple of different places, and but it just, you know, they're so good, Pat. I mean, I thought I was a good football player. It was good for my team and my teammates. Enjoyed, played 16 years of football. But at some point or another, you know, there's some people that are more talented than you. They're stronger, they're faster. For me, getting off the line was always a problem when you go against guys that had the strongest hands you ever seen, defensive backs that could come up and bump and run you. I struggled with that I just wasn't strong enough or fast enough to equal that. So those were some of the things. Could I catch the football? As my profile said, I could catch the football and I could take a hit. That I would go over the middle. I was considered a possession receiver, where in college I was a speed guy. So such a different because of the different level of play that when you get to that level, it's just so much better. And you just had to come to realize that, hey, it's over with.
But when you hear, you know, he can take a hit, I mean, I immediately, for a Chicago kid like you, I'm thinking, you know, that's very much a Ditka style. He'd have been proud if you'd been working together. You're right up his alley for what he wants smash mouth football, as it were.
Right. And I could block. If you can block, you know, but it was just to get away from bump and run, they would have to constantly put me in the slot. So I wasn't always man up on people. And that became a detriment because they want a receiver that can do both in today's market.
And look at you now. You've moved over, you know, into the side that is running an athletic department, is, you know, checking out the talent, keeping a program running. How many national titles now are hanging in the rafters at UW Eau Claire under your tutelage?
We have nine national championships in various sports, and we have a total of 11 as an institution. So there was 2-1 before I got here in 13. So, you know, we have teams that are competing for championships this weekend, and I would hope that hopefully we can sneak one out or at least get to the championship game in one of our sports here.
There you go. You heard it from a man who can take a hit and move on. Dan Schumacher. Thank you very much, man. Have a good weekend.
Take care now.
All righty. And thank you all of you for being with us as well. You can follow me throughout the day, Pat Kreitlow Up North on Facebook or Pat Kreitlow on Twitter. Coming up next in Waukesha, Oshkosh, and Green Bay is Earl Ingram. In Madison, you get Stephanie Miller. And in Richland Center, Wausau and Amory, and all along the Civic Media Radio Network, the Todd Alba Show is coming up next. Have a great weekend. We'll see you Monday.